the system inside the bladder. Rhys gave it a yank to ensure it was in place.
You think you can make me talk American? I used to rape guys like you in prison. I used to rape wives in front of husbands, daughters in front of fathers, and then chop them up in little pieces. You think you are tough, American? I think I'll fuck that little blonde bitch of yours right in front of you. How would you like that, you weak piece of shit?
Rhys kept his composure, unhooked the catheter bag and attached the syringe filled with the capsaicin solution. He took another look at the bloodied mafia hitman in front of him and pushed in 5 cc's of pain. 8 seconds later, the Russian's body contorted in agony as his bladder erupted in an uncontrollable spasm, coupled with the most intense cramping imaginable. His body naturally attempted to curl up and vomit, but the noose and tape held him in place, vomit spewing from his nose and mouth, eyes bulging from his head. Rhys waited 30 seconds and then attached the syringe with water, flushing the capsaicin from the Russian's system. Rhys stepped back, waiting for his breathing to return to normal.
Maybe that first question was too difficult,
Rhys said, disconnecting the clean syringe and reattaching the one with capsaicin.
Let's try something easier. What's your name?
What harm could that do?
Dmitri thought. Instead, all that came out between labored breaths, chunks of vomit still falling from his mouth, was,
"Fuck you!"
Rhys didn't hesitate. Depressing the plunger, he sent 15 cc of his homemade mixture, 3 times the original dose, into the Russian's bladder. Then he stepped back. The results were horrific. The man's neck strained against the noose as he began to foam at the mouth, choking, cramping, vomiting, emitting a visceral cry reserved for those in the throes of death. Rhys counted the seconds ticking by on his watch, giving a full minute this time before flushing the system again. Then he waited as the animal became human, trying desperately to breathe.
Who was this American?
I already know that Ivan Zharkov ordered the hit. I know he is the head of the Tambov gang. I know you work for him. You won't be betraying him. I'm already going to hunt him down and kill him. Nothing you say will change that. And as you've probably figured out, you are not leaving here alive. What I need to know is why. If you can tell me that, I can offer you a quick death. His detainee paused in thought.
James Rhys, I studied you. I knew we needed a professional team. Yet we almost killed you with a group of thugs. In the Bratva we learned too. They will come again. And this time they won't just be after you and your friend. The next time they come, it will be professionals. You've insulted their honor now. That is something that Brodva will not let, how you say, lie. They will kill you all. Wives, children, especially children. The Bratva doesn't want to fight another generation. They might even fuck a few of your women to death and make you watch. They will come for you, and they will kill every last one of you.
Rhys knew it was true. In his head, he saw visions of the dead. There was only one way this ended, and it was up to Rhys to finish it. Rhys slowly picked through the med kit until he found a connector from the IV kit and attached it to the syringe, which he then connected to the Y port on the IV drip. Last chance, Rhys said.
Fuck you,
the Russian said without much enthusiasm. He's close. Rhys slightly depressed the plunger, releasing what he hoped was about 1 cc of capsaicin into the IV drip and directly into the Russian's bloodstream. A blood-curdling scream filled the cabin as every single pain receptor in the Russian's body ignited at once, like a bolt of lightning hitting brain, muscles, and organs. A pain worse than the previous 2 capsaicin exposures threatened to boil the Russian from the inside out. Intestinal fluids began to spew from his lungs, while brain secretions worked their way into his nasal cavity and labyrinth of his inner ear. His heart felt like it was about to explode. Via the bloodstream was the most painful delivery method for the solution, but it was also the most short-lived. A person would metabolize the 1cc solution in about 30 seconds to a minute, depending on weight, composition, and body type. Rhys kept slowly injecting the serum as he sensed it was beginning to subside. "What? I can't hear you," Rhys said over the screams. "Only you can stop this. Ivan is as good as dead. Just tell me why he sent you and I'll end your pain." Sensing that the Russian's body and brain were about to give out completely, Rhys gave the man a moment of reprieve.
"Dmitri,"
the man said, coming down from what felt like a blowtorch working every portion of his body and brain.
"My name is Dmitri Mashkov."
"See, that wasn't so hard. Keep talking or I keep pushing this shit into your system."
"Please, please."
"It's all up to you. Remember, Ivan Zharkov put you here."
The Russian attempted to catch his breath. He wanted to die.
"I was a prisoner in penal colony number 6 for 7 years. Do you know this place?"
"I can't say I'm familiar."
"It is the oldest prison in all of Russia. They call the prisoners the maniacs. A fitting term, no? Terrorists, child molesters, serial killers, even cannibals. Life sentences only. No one gets out."
"No one but you?"
Ivan Zharkov got me out and brought me back to the Brotherhood. Promoted me. Vakhan did not put me here. The one who betrayed us did. The only reason I am talking to you is so you can find the man who betrayed this mission."
"How do you know someone betrayed it?"
"How do you Americans put it? This was not my first cattle drive. You avoided the ambush, and now you are asking me about Ivan Zharkov a few hours later."
"Tell me about him."
"He worked his way up. He was a foot soldier, like me. In 1991, Russia became like your cowboy West, I think you say. He saw opportunity and is now one of the most powerful men in Russia."
"Why would he want to kill me?" Dmitri hesitated. "Why?" Rhys demanded, shaking the capsaicin syringe attached to the IV line.
"I think it has to do with the American."
"The American?"
"A CIA man defected to Russia and now works for Zharkov."
"What CIA man?" Rhys asked with renewed interest.
"One I escorted from Argentina to Russia. He was an old Soviet mole involved with the President Zubarov assassination."
"Son of a bitch," Rhys thought. "Oliver Gray." "And who do you think betrayed you?" Rhys asked.
"Someone I should have killed long ago. Ivan's son."
"Son?"
"He has many, but the one who is most valuable to the organization is Alexander."
"Why?"
"He's a director in the SVR,
The SVR has ties to the Mafia? Reese asked, pretending he didn't already have the information.
This is Russia. The Bratva intelligence political triad is strong.
I want you to think long and hard about this one. Why would Alexander Zharkov call a contact at the CIA to sell you out moments before the attack? Reese watched as his detainee's eyes flashed with recognition. Tell me.
It is said that Alexander is sick.
He's dying?
No, sick, like, how do you say, crazy?
I don't understand.
Alexander is what I hear called not right in head. He hunts humans.
What? Where?
He leases an island in the Russian Far East from the government. Medne Island. It is said he imports people from Africa, but this is only, how do you say, guess? But if Alexander called your CIA to warn you of the attack, then I want you to kill that Sukha. I know you can't let me live. In exchange for this information, I want you to kill Alexander Zharkov. Send him to me in the afterlife.
You have my word. Reese would have preferred to put a bullet in Dmitri's head, but that would have left DNA all over the former senator's cabin. This was going to be hard enough to clean up as it was. Depressing the syringe's plunger, Reese pushed the remaining 30 cc's of solution into Dmitri's veins, flooding his system with an overdose of capsaicin. The right side of his brain stroked immediately, the left side of his face dropping into paralysis as blood filled his retinas and brain, the red fluid attempting to escape from its dying host through his nose, mouth, and ears. Almost simultaneously, his bladder and bowels released a mess of bloody excrement. Seconds later, his heart went into fibrillation, and Dmitri went to hell to wait for Alexander Zharkov. Reese stepped outside and grabbed the railing of the deck for balance, taking deep breaths of mountain air while suppressing an urge to vomit. Oliver Gray was in Russia working for the Mafia. Working for a man whose son was a senior intelligence official with a penchant for hunting humans. That same son had called a contact at the CIA to betray his father's and Gray's plan to kill him. Why? Reese waved to a worried-looking Liz on the dock, then picked up the sat phone to call Rafe via the landline at the main ranch house.
Hannah?
Caroline Hastings picked up on the first ring, a hint of panic in her usually steady voice.
No, I'm sorry, Caroline, it's Reese. Is Rafe there?
He couldn't wait. He's in the air on his way to Romania to look for Hannah. She hasn't answered her phone or any of our emails. Vic has the embassy trying to track her down, but Rafe doesn't trust them. He just couldn't sit around and wait.
He could tell she'd been crying. Reese paused. I would have done the same.
I know.
Is Vic still there?
Yes, but he's about to return to D.C.,
the Hastings matriarch answered after composing herself. Good. Please tell him I'll meet him at Langley. I don't want to cause another commotion by flying back to the ranch with L.E. still combing the place. How's Katie?
She's a strong woman, Reese. I think it's all sinking in, but she's fine.
Please give her a hug for me and tell her I'll meet her at her place in Alexandria tomorrow. Can you get her home for me?
We can certainly handle that.
Thank you. I'm so sorry I brought this on you, Caroline.
Where is all this leading, Reese?
Russia. Chapter 53.
Iași International Airport, Romania. The flight from Dulles was well within the 8,000-mile range of the G-550, but it was still almost 5 o'clock a.m. when they finally landed. The combined flights had exceeded the crew rest requirements for the two pilots, but given the emergency nature of the trip, they were willing to push it. Despite the creature comforts of Thorn's Gulfstream, for Rafe, rest was an impossibility. Rafe rented a car as rapidly as was possible in Romania from a man speaking passable English and headed directly for the farm where his sister lived, driving the small opel sedan as fast as he dared. His parents had tried to contact Hannah several times during the past 24 hours without success, and the embassy personnel had predictably been unable to track her down. A sense of dread permeated Rafe's very being. His instincts were usually correct. The navigation app he was using was next to worthless in this area, so Rafe had to rely on a paper map that he kept in his lap as he drove, just like the old days. The sun was beginning to rise, illuminating the small farmhouses and villages that dotted the rolling hills, the local residents already moving into the planted fields to bring in the harvest. It was a simple, meaningful existence, and Rafe quickly realized why his baby sister had fallen in love with it. He pulled the sedan off the road and compared the small brick building and nearby barn to a photo on his iPhone. This was the place. Not wanting to disturb anything or anyone, Rafe left the car near the road and walked toward his sister's temporary home on foot. He walked around the barn and saw that a small pickup truck, presumably belonging to Hannah, was parked outside. Maybe she was home and her internet was just down? As he walked farther, he saw that the door to the small home was open. A burst of adrenaline surged through his body as his mind put the pieces together. He was unarmed, a requirement to clear Romanian customs. The old wooden door creaked as Rafe pushed it open. A chair was on its side, and blood was visible on the tile floor. Rafe pushed the horror of the moment from his mind and put his tracking skills to work. The fact that her body wasn't here meant she was probably still alive. He pulled the small pack from his back and retrieved a pair of nitrile gloves from the first aid kit inside. At first glance, it appeared the droplets of blood on the tile floor led outside, but upon close inspection, the pattern indicated it was leading inside the home. The bleeding had begun outside. Rafe went down to his hands and knees and used a small but powerful LED light to search for evidence. A kitchen knife had slid underneath the table and appeared to be covered in blood. Hannah had fought, and for a slight moment a sense of brotherly pride broke through the pain. The beam from his light found a strand of hair that appeared to belong to his sister on the floor, an arm's reach away from the knife. Rafe backtracked outside and searched the soft, dry ground. He paced the area with his eyes on the ground, stopping, kneeling, then going prone, just as Melusi had taught him back in Africa.
"The tracks will tell the story. Let them speak."
After 20 minutes of study, those tracks had given their testimony. A vehicle, a van by the looks of it, had stopped by the road, and two large males wearing work boots had stepped out. One set of boot tracks led to the back of the home, where he'd knelt, next to the door. The other set of tracks led to the front door. It swung outward, and he'd positioned himself on the hinge side so that he would be hidden when it opened. A woman wearing high-heeled boots had traded places with the driver and driven the van up the driveway toward the home. The tracks led to the door where she'd likely lured Hannah outside. The man had probably pounced on his sister from behind in the darkness, and based on the greenish hue of the blood trail, had taken a knife to the guts for his trouble. Hannah had been subdued just outside the back door. The drag marks left by her feet led to the van, which indicated that she'd been unconscious, either knocked out, drugged, or both.
Where would they take her?
That was the psychology of tracking. Learn from the spoor and anticipate